Now we're holding on page Ein Zayin in Rosh Hashanah, Ois Tov Galen. So we learned about the whole story with Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua, where Rav Gamliel considered that certain Edim are kosher Edim and we can declare Rosh Hashanah on a certain day. Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yosef and Hokinas held that they're false Edim and Rosh Hashanah should be the next day, and that would make a difference as far as the date of Yom Kippur. So Rav Gamliel put his foot down and told Rabbi Yeshua that he has to come with his walking stick and his money on the day that he claims to be Yom Kippur, and which according to Rabbi Gamliel and according to his Beis Din is actually the day after. So we said in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yeshua felt bad about it, but then Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yosef ben Hokinas explained to him that he has to do that. So Pisco we had in the Mishnah, so sure enough, he took his walking stick and his money in his hand, and he went to Yavne to see Rabbi Gamliel. And when he came there, then the Mishnah had said, Rav Gamliel stood up and kissed him on his head and turned and welcomed him. So the Braisa says, turn it up on. We learn in a Braisa with a little more detail. Kivin to Ra Oisa Rav Gamliel, when Rav Gamliel saw Rabbi Yeshua, Omad al Ragla Mikisa, he stood up from his chair, and stood up on his feet, Unashokai al Rosha, and he kissed Rabbi Yeshua on the head, Omalai Shalom Alecha Rebbe Talmidi, welcome to you, my Rebbe and my Talmud. I'm calling you both Rebbe Shilimantani Torah Berabim. You're my Rebbe because you've taught me Torah in public. Now, we don't explicitly find necessarily any place where Rabbi Yeshua explicitly teaches Rabbi Gamliel Torah, but still, since Rabbi Yeshua, it seems, was a good deal older than Rabbi Gamliel, then the Pashtus, he must have at one time or another taught him Torah. Although Ben Yehoyada points out an interesting point, we have the famous story of the Tanu Shalach Noi, which as we discussed on Thursday, may have happened not long before this story when Rabbi Eliezer was insisting the halacha is like him, and Rabbi Yeshua said, Loi b'shamayim he. So in that sense, Rabbi Yeshua was saying he taught Barabim, Rabbi Gamliel means meaning you yourself, Rabbi Yeshua, taught that the halacha follows the rabbin. So therefore, now you yourself are holding true to that, and you're following the rabbin, namely my Beis Din, that said that this is when Rosh Hashanah and this is when Yom Kippur is. So therefore, so you're my Rebbe in that sense, that you first taught that concept, Talmidi, and you acting as my Talmid, Shani Gozer, Alecha Gzeira, Vata Makaima, Alecha, I made a Gzeira on you, I ordered you to come, and you listened, and you fulfilled it, Katalmid, exactly like a Talmid would do. And Rav Gamliel continues, Ashrei Ador Shagdolim Nishmoyim Laktanim, happy is the generation where the greater people listen to the lesser ones. In other words, he's saying, Rabbi Yeshua, you are actually greater than me, because again, you taught me Torah, but nevertheless, happy is the generation when you do like that, and you listen to me, even though I understand that I'm less of a Talmud Chacham than you are. Kavachomer, Ktanim Nishmoyim Lagdolim, and a Kavachomer that the lesser ones should listen to the greater ones. So the Gemara asks, what does Rav Gamliel mean with that last statement? Kavachomer. What do you mean? What is it? Just a kavachomer? Chiyuvah. It's an actual outright view that the Ketanim should pay attention and do what the Gdolim say. Ella, what he means is, mitoch shagdolim nishmoyim laktanim, because the greater ones, like you, Rabbi Yeshua, listen to the Ketanim, the lesser ones who nevertheless have a position, such as me, nosu, nosim Ketanim, kavachomer ba'atzman, that causes the Ketanim to realize for themselves a Kavachomer, not just, yes, it says in Shulchan Aruch, I have to respect the Gdolim, but I can learn, if even Rabbi Yeshua is going to set his covered aside and go and listen to Rabbi Gamliel, how much more so that I should be listening to those who are actually greater than me. So first of all, Marsha says that Rabbi Gamliel, again, is expressing himself in a way of anivus. So, of course, you know, he does have a higher position than Rabbi Yeshua. In that sense, he's greater than him. But he's saying, in terms of chokhmah of Torah, your chokhmah exceeds mine. And also, of course, there are certain things. There are indeed things where you do have to listen to the Ketanim, one of them being this, Rabbi Gamliel being the Nasi, then he's the one. In his hands is the whole matter of Kiddush HaKodesh, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua has to listen to him. And therefore Rabbi Gamliel is complimenting him for doing just that, and therefore setting a good example for everybody else. With that said, like we talked about on Thursday, the fact is, eventually, after a couple of more times when these kinds of things happen, Rav Gamliel in general was trying, so here we said he's trying to avoid that there shouldn't be different people are going to be celebrating Yom Tov on different days, the whole Jewish people would split apart as a result of that, Rahman al-Atlan. Then there were a couple of other examples during the next few months after that, where again, Rabbi Yeshua held a certain way in Halacha, and Rav Gamliel held differently, and Rav Gamliel forced Rabbi Yeshua to accept his opinion publicly. And after a couple more times of that, you have a case involving a Bechor in the Sechta Bechoris, and you have a case involving Tfilas Avis, Rishus, and Brachas. After that, the Chacham said, we had enough of it. Yes, we understand Rabbi Gamliel was doing Lashem Shemayim, but nevertheless, he's going a little too far. And then they deposed him and appointed Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and the whole story developed from there, as we have the famous story in Brachas. Ra'u based in Perek Shlishi. The beginning of the Perek continues where the first Mishnah of it continues talking about the halachas of Kiddush HaKodesh. Ra'u based in is a case where the whole based in saw the new moon and they didn't have a chance to declare Rosh Chodesh before it became dark, and the Gemara explains that they can only do it by day. Then after that, the rest of the Perek and the rest of the Perek and the rest of the Masechta talks about the dinim of Rosh Hashanah. So the Mishnah says, Kol HaShofer, page Ein Zayin in Rosh Hashanah. Kol HaShofer is Ksherim Chutz Mishal Parah. Any shofer from an animal is kosher except for a horn of a cow, because that kind is called Keren in the Pasuk, and it has to be something which is called shofer. Rabbi Yossi, Vale Kol HaShofer is Nikru Keren, but Rabbi Yossi objects, aren't all shofers called by the name Keren as well? Dichtiv, Shenema, as we have a Pasuk, When Hashem tells Yeshua to have the Jewish people march around Yericho one time each of the first 6 days, and then seven times on the seventh day, and then they're going to blow shofar, and everybody's going to yell out, and the walls are going to collapse. We enact that every year when we do Hakafah, when we do Hashinus during Sukkot, when we have one time around the Bima each of the first 6 days, and seven times on Hashanah Rabbah, we're reenacting that. So the pasuk says, "Gim shoyf the keren hayovel." When the horn of the yovel blows a long sound, then that's when you're gonna yell out with bitachon that Hashem is gonna fight on your behalf, and the walls are going to sink into the ground. So we see, says Rav Yossi. Now a yovel, as the Gemara is going to explain, means a ram, and a ram is the typical animal that you take a shofar from. Earlier in the Masechta, in fact, it says that why preferentially do we take a horn from a ram? It reminds Hashem, so to speak, of Akedas Yitzchak. So and we see yet that the pasuk calls it a keren. So and the pasuk, now the pasuk does continue shofar. It continues kishamach and eskola shofar. But nevertheless, we see that it's called a keren. So therefore, what's the problem if the horn of a cow or of an ox is called keren? So the Gemara says, Shapir Ka'amar Rav Yossi, doesn't Rav Yossi have a good point? What would the Chachamim answer back to that? And by the way, Tosfos points out, first of all, now we are limiting ourselves to the kinds of horns that are actually hollow. The word shofar is related to the word shofaris, which means a tube. So it has to be, in order for it to be a kosher shofar, you have animals with horns, you have two types. You have ones like deer and various, and moose and other types of animals like that, where their horns or antlers or whatever are solid bone. Those are not kosher as a shofar. Even if you drill a hole through them, they're still not a natural shofar, and therefore they're possible. What we're talking about is the kind of thing some animals have. You have projections on their head made of bone and flesh and whatever, and then on top of that is a thing made of keratin, the same material that hair and nails and hooves are made out of. And you know, if you've ever been to a shofar making factory, so you have, they take the horn with all that guts and everything inside it, and they boil it in order to separate it, and it smells awful, and then you eventually pull out the core over there, and you have left the shofar, and then you shape it and drill a hole and drill a mouthpiece in it, and so forth. So only the kind that are a natural shofar like that are kosher, which is why, for example, the Gemara is not dealing with, let's say, deer or other animals like that. Tosfos points out, by the same token, what about non-kosher animals? The Mishnah doesn't address those. Tosfos says maybe there are no non-kosher animals that have naturally hollow horns. Nevertheless, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, because the Mishnah doesn't say one way or the other, l'chatchila, you shouldn't use them because maybe they are in fact possible, but b'di'evit, if you have no other, and you do happen to find a non-kosher animal that has hollow horns, then b'di'evit, it says in Shulchan Aruch, you can use them. Anyway, so now, among the animals that have naturally hollow horns, one of them is cattle, cows and bulls. So now the Mishnah is saying you can't use those, but Rabbi Yossi is disagreeing. So the question is, Shapir Kamer Rav Yossi, doesn't Rav Yossi have a good point? If all of them are called Keren, then what's the difference between a cow and any other kind? The Rabbanan answered that, Kol HaShofer is Ikru Shofer v'Ikru Keren. The difference is, any other shofer, for example, from a ram, like we mentioned in the passage from Yeshua, yes, it's called both. It's called shofer, and it's also called Keren. For example, Rashi explains, let's say by Matan Torah, you have the same thing. Vimshoch ha-yovel, it uses the same expression, when the yovel blows a long blast, whereas the Gemara is going to point out soon that yovel is another word for a ram. So there also we're talking about a horn of a ram. Famously, you have the idea that the two horns from the ram that was offered in place of Yitzchak, one smaller horn was used by Matan Torah, and the greater horn will be the shofar gadol that's blown when Mashiach comes. But you also have by Yikol HaShofar, it also mentions it as a shofar, so therefore the Chachamim say the same thing with a ram and the same thing with other species, they can be called either one. The Pora, Keren Ikri, Shofar Lo Ikri. When it comes to a cow or a bull, we only find it called in the Pasuk Keren, we never find it called shofar. Dichtiv, as you have a Pasuk, Bechor, in the Bracha, in Moshe's Bracha, to Shevet Yosef, Bechor Shorei Hodoloi, the firstborn of his ox has his glory, Bechane Re'im Kaunav, and his horns are like the horns of a Re'im. So we see that the horns of an ox or a cow are called, they're compared to the horns of a Re'im, and they're called Keren. In fact, the Rishonim will point out, depending on what you understand or aim to be, and there are a number of different opinions what it is exactly, the point may be that a aim, in fact, has horns that are naturally not hollow. They're naturally just made of bone without the keratin cover. So therefore, they'd be possible, as we said before. So if a Pasuk is comparing the horns of an ox to those, that the implication is, even though physically they are, in fact, hollow, and conceivably you could make a shofar out of them, but we're comparing them to the horns of an aim, which, in fact, is intrinsically possible because not hollow. Okay. But Rabbi Yossi Omoloch, what does Rabbi Yossi answer back to that? He says, the poranami ikri shofar. As a matter of fact, the horn of a cow can indeed be also called a shofar, dichtiv, as you have a pasuk in Tillim. David HaMelech says about his tefillah, v'sitav l'Hashem mishur per, may my tefillah be more pleasing before Hashem than a shur per. Now, the simple meaning, in other words, is he's saying that it should be better than an ox that's brought as a korban. But you have to ask, why the two expressions, in shur lama par, the in prior lama shur? Why the double expression shur and par? And in fact, shur can mean an animal even when it was born. The Gemara explains that since you have the pasuk shur a chesiv a eiz ki yivoled, we learn from that that an animal, that the animal can be called a shur even on the day it's born. On the other hand, par suggests an animal that's a little older. When we have, for example, when the Torah mentions par ben bakar, then it means it's a couple of years old. So what is it, a shur or a par? Ela my shur per mi shofar. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi says that the David HaMelech is asking that my tefillah should be more pleasing to Hashem than the sound of the shofar. Now, though, since the pasuk is phrasing it as shur per rather than saying outright shofar, therefore he says you have both. It means the horn of an ox, and the horn of an ox can in fact be used as a shofar. So there you go, says Rabbi Yossi. So you could. Virabonon, what are the Chachamim answer back to that? They say, Kidirab Masna. They say the reason, no, that pasuk does not mean a shofar. It does in fact mean a shur, which is also a par, and the reason is based on what Rab Masna says. The Om Rab Masna, my shur per, shu gadol kapar. Rab Masna explains that what the word shur par in the pasuk, again, given that shur can mean a newborn animal, and par necessarily means an animal that's a couple of years old, then we learn from that double expression that it means that this particular shur was one that when it was born was already as big as a cow. And that was specifically the one that was created by Maisa Bereshis. We learned earlier in the Masechta that all the creatures that were created during Maisa Bereshis were created with their full height and their full strength and everything. So therefore, the power that was created on the day of Maisa Bereshis actually had, it was the size and strength of a full grown power. Therefore, David is saying, I'm asking that my tefillah should be more acceptable to Hashem, more than that korban that Adam Rishon brought, where it says that animal that was created by Sheshes Mei Bereshis, the original ox that was created by Sheshes Mei Bereshis, and it was created fully grown, Adam Rishon brought it as a korban, and now David is asking that my tefillah should be better for Hashem than that. So therefore, the Chachamim say, so the Pasuk is not in fact talking about a shofar, it's talking about a shur, which is also a par. So therefore, no proof from there that the horn of an ox can be called a shur. Okay, the Gemara continues, Ula Omer Hainu Taima. Ula gives a different reason why the Chachamim would say that you can't use a horn of an ox as a shofar. The reason is based on what Rav Chista says. The Omer of Chista, if name Ma Ein Kohen Gadol, Nichnas Bevigdei Zahav Lefnai VeLefnim La'Avod Avoda. Why does the Kohen Gadol not wear the Bigdei Zahav when he goes into the Kodesh Hakadoshim to do the Avoda? Why does he Davka only wear the Bigdei Lavan Lefishen Kateger Nasa Saneger? Because the accuser cannot become the defender. Meaning, in other words, since the gold is going to remind Hashem, so to speak, of the Chet HaEgel, and therefore we don't want that in the Kodesh HaKadosh. So the same thing, we don't want a shofar, because yes, same idea, it's going to, so to speak, remind Hashem of the Chet HaEgel. Now, the Gemara goes on to ask, what about, we have all kinds of examples to the contrary. The fact is, most of the time, the Kohen Gadol does wear big days of, and we do have korbanos of oxen that are meant as kapara, and we have other examples like that. The Gemara ends up saying that there's limit, when this rule of Ein Kateger, Nasa Saneger, has limitations. It's only when we're beautifying ourselves with it. For example, the Kohen Gadol is going to wear clothes with gold, going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is a beautiful thing, L'chobed Ol Sifares, then you shouldn't do that to the Ein Kateger Nasa Saneger. And it has to be L'fnim, it has to be in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's not a problem when it's outside. So therefore, so then Gemara says, now on the other hand, the shofar, of course it takes place outside, the Beis Hamikdash, but because it's meant to bring the zikaron of us Jewish people before Hashem, therefore it's considered like ponim, it's the equivalent of something that takes place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and therefore we shouldn't use the horn of a cow for it. Marsha, in fact, refers over here to, it's both. I mean, a cow is a female, a shur is the male, they're both the same species. Yeah, so both the females, with certain breeds of them anyway, yeah, both females and the males have horns, yeah. Anyway, Marsha points out that, you know, we had in this past week's parasha, in Parsha Shmini, we had some of the korbanos that came from the Milurim. Among them was an eagle, ben bako lachatos, and Rashi pointed out over there it was meant to be machapra on the Maisa eagle. So, okay, the Gemara is saying over here that's not a problem, because that's bachutz. This is bifnim. Then he refers to the Mizrahi on that Rashi in Parsha Shmini, where the Mizrahi explains that actually the vote is precisely because he's able to precise the very fact that he's able to bring such a korban on by the Miluim, that itself is the biggest demonstration that Hashem forgave the Jewish people for the Chet HaEgel. Otherwise, how is Hashem even telling him to bring such a korban? So therefore, there we can have the Kateger can be a Saneger, because as the Gemara is saying, it's bachutz, and it's not a problem, and Adrab, the very fact that he's using it shows that Hashem was, Rashi says on the pasuk over there, it's a simen, that Hashem was machapra and machat egel. How is it a simen? That's exactly how, because otherwise Hashem would not even tell him to bring such a carving, and Aaron himself wouldn't even do it. Then the Gemara goes on to discuss other reasons why the horn of a cow is possible. So the Maaseh said, that's how it is. Horn of a cow is possible, or bull is possible. The shofar, the horn of any other kosher animal that's naturally hollow is kosher. Most people use horns from a ram. It's interesting, you know, the Rambam actually holds that only the horn of a ram is kosher. The Rambam holds that based on the Gemara earlier in the Masechta, that even though based on this Gemara, it would sound like all of them are kosher, the Rambam actually passes only one from a ram is kosher. It's interesting, you know, the Temonim, for the most part, follow the Rambam almost exclusively. This is one halacha where they do not. Temonim, as we all know, have those long shofaris that come from an animal called the kudu, those 6-foot long shofaris, which are not from a ram, and they have to preferentially use those. So the Gemara goes on that, so again, we mentioned the Pasukim Shof, the Keren HaYovel, and we need to establish how we know that Yovel means a ring. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rav Akiva, Kshehalachti La'arvia. Rav Akiva says, when I traveled to Arabia, and there were Jews living there at the time, Rav Akiva, we're going to see from this Gemara, and we see from other Gemaras and other places in Chas, that Rav Akiva traveled all over the Jewish world. The Pashtos, he wanted to meet the Jews over there, be machazik them in Torah, and so forth. And did he come to, well, there were, if there were Jews in Crown Heights, he would have come to Crown Heights. We don't know of any. There is actually, they have found here and there in the Americas, they have found archaeological artifacts that seem to have some relationship to Yiddishkeit. And there's some place in the Sikha where the Rebbe talks about that maybe those people have said, and the Rebbe mentions in the Sikha that maybe those are indications that sporadically over time Jews actually came here long before Columbus, but there's no solid evidence of it. In any case, whether Rebbe Akiva visited them, I doubt that. But who knows? Anyway. So Rebbe Akiva says, Shalachti La'arvia, when I traveled to Arabia, Hoyukorim Dichra Yovla, I found over there that their word in their word in Arabic for a ram is yovla. So that helps illuminate when the pasuk says the b'shoch b'keren ayovla by Matan Torah and by the walls of Yericho. Now we know that the word yovla means a ram. So how comes it that the Torah is using foreign words? So of course it's not the only thing. We have famously, for example, tap the kaspi shayim paspa friki shayim. So the Shalach Kodesh says on it that actually all these words are from Lashon Kodesh, but some of them, for one reason or another, stopped being used in Lashon Kodesh, and they continue to be used in other languages. So when the Gemara is identifying a certain word from Tanakh as being a word from one of these languages, not saying that it originates from those languages and the Torah borrowed it there, but adab the other way around, that those languages originally got it from Lashon Kodesh. There are other Mephoshim who explain that it can also be understood differently. The Torah incorporates within it all the languages, so therefore, like the Torah here and there is hinting to all the different languages. Anyway, the Amar Rabbi Akiva says, here's another one. Shalachti l'Galia. When I went to Galia, now Galia is actually the Latin name for France. So maybe that means that Parshat Rabbi Akiva traveled all the way to France. Historically, we know that Rabbi Akiva lived in, we know, in the generation after the Churban. He lived through the Churban, and then he was alive for some 50 or 60 years after it. At the time of the Churban, in particular, we know the Romans took lots of Jews captive from Eretz Yisrael, and they brought them to all different places in their empire, including France. So it's very possible by that time there were actually Jews living in France, and Rabbi Akiva went to visit them. With that said, Galia can also potentially mean an area in Turkey, so maybe Rabbi Akiva didn't travel quite that far. Anyway, so he says, when I went there, Hayukur in the Nida Galmuda, I found that their word for Nida is Galmuda. And my Galmuda, why indeed? Why is that? Why Taka? What is there about that word Galmuda that's appropriate? Gmula Domi Baila. It's short for this one is separated. Gmula, like when you have a child is gomul, is weaned from his mother. So the word gomul can mean to be separated. So therefore, this one is separated from her husband. Why is that important to know? Tosfos points out you have a Gemara in Sota that explains that a chone, the person who chanfers Rishoyim and tells them what you're doing is good, keep up the good work, or something to that effect, is ma'usa kenida, is disgusting in Hashem's eyes as a nida, and we learn that from a pasuk that says ki adas chonef galm. So we see that the word galmud, now that we know that the word galmud means nida, now we're able to make that drasha. Marsha points out, the fact is, usually we have in Tanakh, the word Galmud is usually a Moshin Zohar. This is actually the only place where here we have the Moshin Nekeva. But the point is that fine, it means that a person who acts in certain ways, yes, is Galmud, is considered disgusting, and you should stay away from him like a nigger. And he brings, and Marsha brings from Medrash Rabba, that brings also a pasuk from Iyov that mentions the word Galmud in connection with famine. And we learn from that what the Gemara tells us in Tainus, which we'll learn in a while, Be'ez Hashem, that when there's a famine in the world, then a couple shouldn't have relations. We learn from that when there's the chesed of a chafan, when there's a lacking, and when there's famine, galmud, then you should treat your wife like a nida and not have relations with her. So therefore, yes, so the word galmud or galmuda means a nida. Next, the Omer Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva also says, Shalachti la'Afriki, when I went to Afriki. Afriki could mean Africa. It's known that there were Jewish communities in North Africa in that time. It's also, Afriki sometimes can also mean another area of Turkey. Anyway, when I went there, Hoyukon Ma'ak Sita, I found that their word for a ma'a, which is a small coin, 1/6 of a dinner, is ksita. Lamai Nafkamina, why is that important to know? Lafurushi Me'ak Sita Da'udaisa, it helps us understand when it says that Yaakov paid for a plot of land in Shechem, where he pitched his tent, and later on Yosef was buried in that place. This is the famous cave of Yosef that still exists nowadays, although the Arabs have vandalized it over and over. But that place he bought from Meir Ksita, now we understand Meir Danki, that it means he paid 100 ma'a for that plot of land. Famously, it says, the Medrash says, that that's one of three places in Eretz Yisrael where the Goyim shouldn't be able to claim that we don't have rights to them because we bought them fair and square. That, the Harabayas, and the Hamaras and Achela. Ironically, of course, those adopt are the ones that they argue against the most. But yeah. Why does it have to mention each time the Omer Rabbi Akiva and Shalachti to such and such places? So Ben Yehoyada points out the Halachti is meant to stress. You shouldn't think maybe Rabbi Akiva just heard these from travelers or whatever. No, he actually went and personally found these things out. And then when it says each time, but Omar Rabbi Akiva, because otherwise we might think, okay, so maybe Rabbi Akiva happens to know these particular foreign words. But like this, each time we're saying, but Omar Rabbi Akiva. Each Chacham in the Beis Medrash is saying, I heard that Rabbi Akiva knows of this one. And the other one says, I heard that Rabbi Akiva knows of this one. That shows us there are many more that Rabbi Akiva knows. In fact, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that Rabbi Akiva was one of the members of the Sanhedrin of his times who knew all the languages. So here, when we have three examples, means that these are not the only ones he knows. There are lots of others. The Gemara just didn't find the need to quote them. Okay. The Gemara continues. Omer Reb Shimon Lakish, Shalachti L'Tchur, sorry, I skipped one. Omer Rebbe, Shalachti L'Krakei Hayam. Rebbe says, when I went to the towns near the sea, so it can mean on the seacoast of Eretz Yisrael, it can mean someplace else. Anyway, Hoyukorin L'Mechira Hira. I found that their word for selling, which is Mechira in Lashon Kodesh, their word for it is Kira. L'may Nafkamina, why is that important to know? L'forushi Asher Korisi Li. It helps us understand when the Pasuk says, when Yaakov says that I want you to bury to Yosef, I want, and Yosef later on quotes that to Paray, and he says that Yaakov said, I want to be buried in Ma'aris Machpelah, Asher Korisi Li. So now we understand Asher Korisi, the simple meaning you would think Korisi means I dug for myself. What do you mean? Dug Ma'aris Machpelah is already there, long before him. It means that I bought for myself, because as Rashi mentions on the Pasuk, and the Gemara mentions in the Sefer Soita, that Yaakov paid Esav a huge amount of money for the rights to be buried there, and still Esav came and claimed that he should have the right to, and he had the whole fight with him and Kosh and Ben-Don and so forth. But we see that the word Asher Korisi then means then that I bought the spot as a place for myself to be buried. Okay. Here's another one. Amr of Shimon Lakish, Shalachti L'Tchum Kain Nishraya. When I went to the area of Kain Nishraya, the name of a place, Hoyukorin L'Kalam Ninfi L'Tanakol Sech. I found that their word for Kala is Ninfi. Rabbi Hanano points out that this is actually a Greek word. In Greek, the word nymph means a kala. So here the Gemara has it as nymphy. Well, the town goes sechli, and I found that their word for rooster is sechli. What's the relevance of that? Let's kala nymphy micro. Where's a posik where we see that expressed? The posik says, you fain noif mesois kolaret. It says about Yerushalayim, it's the beauty of noif. So literally, the simple meaning of noif means like the view, like the landscape or something. But the joy of all the earth. Now we understand that it also means Yerushalayim is like a beautiful kala, and the whole world rejoices over the beauty of it. So the word noif related to the word nin. And the latanical sechi, Amr of Yehuda Amr Rabbi, Boi Seim, Rabbi Shimon Levi, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, or Rabbi Shimon Levi, my crop, where is a posik where we see there, why it's relevant to know what sechi means? The posik says, Mi Shos Batuchos Chokma, who is it? This is part of Hashem explaining to you, if you're wondering how I run the world, and you're wondering why it is that the Rishoyim sometimes have it good and the Tzadikim suffer like you are, you should realize that you don't even begin to understand how I run the world. Mi shos batuchos chokma. Who is it that placed chokma in the tuchos, which the Gemara is going to explain in a second what that means? Oy mi nosa masechvi vina, or who is it that gave the sechvi understanding? So mi shos batuchos chokma elo kloyes. The words mi shos batuchos chokma refers to the kidneys. But throughout Shas and throughout Midrashim, we often talk about kloyes yoyetzos, that the kidneys are what advise a person what to do. How to understand that when nowadays medical science understands that the kidneys are meant to filter the blood and then produce urine. So one idea is that's just it. They're filtering out the blood the same way. In other words, as when you're thinking through ideas, you filter out what are the good ones and what are the not so good ones, and you come to a conclusion. But another way of looking at it is also you have on top of the kidneys, there are a couple of glands, the adrenal glands that produce hormones that make a person, they increase a person's heart rate and do other things when they're faced with danger. So therefore, in that sense, his kidneys, those glands that are attached to the kidneys advise him what to do, for example, fight or flight or other things like that, and have a tremendous effect on how a person acts and how a person's body chemistry works. Anyway, so who is it that placed chokhmah in the tuchos, in the kloyos? Rashi explains the basic meaning of the word tuchos is the smooth ones, and they're called that because the kidneys are the kidneys are smooth. The Orach HaNer actually wonders about that. Why? What does he mean like that? Maybe Rashi means chaluka. It's not smooth, but rather separated. In the sense that you have a right kidney and a left kidney. But fine. I mean, you have lots of other body parts that also you have two of. So he says maybe the possibility is also maybe the word tuchos means covered. Like you have the tochas abolis, which means that you plaster the house after you remove the stones with tzaras. So you see the word toch means to cover over with plaster. So the same way, since the kidneys are covered by a sheath of fat, and we know that fat is among the chaylev that's removed for korbanos, maybe that's why they're called tuchos. Anyway. When the pasuk continues, who gave the sechvi understanding? The word sechvi, based on this, that Shlokish found in the Sechum Kan Nishraya, where their word for a chicken is for the rooster is sechvi. Then we understand Hashem is telling Iyov, who is it that gave the sechvi understanding? And this is when we have in morning brachas. I know some sechvi bina lahavkin ben yom ben loyla. The kata has two meanings. It does mean that. It also and that's why, for example, the Alter Rebbe mentions in the Siddur that if you're saying brachas early in the morning, if you're saying it before the time when the roosters crow, then your taka shouldn't make the bracha yet. But and then the other meaning of it that the Rishonim explained, the other meaning of sefi is the heart, and it means that Hashem gave a person's heart the understanding to be able to tell the difference between day and night. Another one involving words that the Chachamim were not familiar with the explanation of. Levi Iklalahu Asra. Levi one time visited a certain place. Also Gavrila Kame, a person came to see him. Omale, and he complains to Levi, Kva'on Planya. So and so, Kva'on. Now the nun at the end means me. So it means so and so, Kva'on. Loi Hava Yadim, I Omalehem. Levi didn't know what he means. What is he complaining about? Also, Shoyl Ben Medrash. So he went to ask him, Ben Medrash. Omrei Gozvan Amalach. He says, so they told him, he means the guy wants to tell you that Pliny stole from me, robbed me, dichtiv. And we find the word kova used in that sense. And a pasuk, Hayikva Odom Alekim, the Navi Malach, he says to the people, can a person possibly steal from Hashem? And yet you're doing that. Ba'amartem, and he continues, Ba'mevagomer, how are we stealing from you? And he says, Ha'maisev ha'truma, you're failing to give truma and maisev like you're supposed to. So in that sense, you're stealing from Hashem, and you can't do that. We have that in the Haftarah of Shabbos HaGadol, where in the Velt, they do it every Shabbos HaGadol, and we do it only when Shabbos HaGadol is Erev Shabbos. But anyway, which is going to be next year, is scheduled to be that way. So we see that the word kova means to steal or to rob. So therefore, when this guy comes to Levi with the complaint, kvan pliny, it means that pliny robbed. Amalei Rabbi Mibarnish L'Ravashi. So generations later, Rabbi Mibarnish says to Ravashi, "Ihavoi Hosim, if I had been there, if I had been in Levi's situation, I wouldn't have had to go ask him this matter. Hava Amin Alei, I would have started asking the guy the who's and the what's. Heichi Kvach, how was he kova you? The Mai Kvach, regarding what? Did he do it by my kvach, and why did he do it? And with all of that, from Amela, Havi Yadinin, with all of that, I would have figured out. He would tell me, for example, Hefi kvach, well, I was holding something, and he grabbed it from me. The my kvach, it was such and such, and therefore I would put two and two together, and I'd understand that the word kava means to steal. But Taka, why didn't Levi do that? The Ihu Salam, Milsadi Sura, Karmalay, because Levi thought maybe the guy is accusing this other fellow of doing a Dvar Isur, maybe of doing like an immoral act with him or something. So therefore it wouldn't be tzniastic to start asking how did he do it and what did he do exactly. So therefore Levi had to go ask in the Beis Medrash. Okay. More examples of the Chachamim not knowing the meanings of certain words. Loi Havu Yadi Rabban and my Sirugim. The Chachamim in Rebbe's times did not know what the word Sirugim means. Marshall points out, we find in other places in Shas, sometimes there were high-level Chachamim who would use words that are not used by the common people, and therefore even the regular Chachamim would not be familiar. When they're using a Lashon HaPasuk, then fine, the Chachamim might be more familiar with it. When you're using Lishna D'Inshi, when they're using the common terminology that regular people use, then also they'd understand it. But if it's neither of the above, then they might not understand. So the word Sirugin was one of them. And you have a Mishnah in Megillah that says that if you read the Megillah, Sirugin, then you're Yotzis. So what is Sirugin? Shamu'la Amsa de Bay Rebbe. Then one day they heard the maid of Rebbe's household, who we find in a number of places in Shas, was a very smart lady, the Chazasanu Rabbanan, the Ailu Paski. She saw that the Chachamim are coming in a few at a time instead of coming in altogether. Omrulahu, she said to them, I must ask the Nechnasin, Sirugin, Sirugin, how long are you going to come in, Sirugin, Sirugin? So now they understand what Sirugin means. It means piecemeal. So Kras Sirugin would mean you read a few psukim from the Megillah, and then you paused, and then you read a few more psukim, etc., and the Mishnah is saying you can be Yotzah that way. Similarly, Another example, the Chum did not know the meaning of the word chalug lugos. It's a plant. We learned, for example, in Masechta Yoma that during the 7 days before Yom Kippur, they wouldn't, and particularly on the day before Yom Kippur, they wouldn't allow the Kohen Gadol to eat certain kinds of foods because they're more likely to make them a Baal Peri. And for that reason also, it mentions over there are certain foods that a Zog should not eat because they're more likely to make them become a Baal Keri and therefore to lose his 7 days of counting. And one of them is Chalug Lugos, so the Chum did not know what Chalug Lugos are. Then one day they heard this maidservant of Rebbe saw a person had scattered parpechine, which is a type of vegetable. In English, it's called purslane. It's distantly related to parsley and other vegetables like that. And she says to him, how long are you scattering your chalugluchos? So now they understand. Now they can recognize this vegetable, and now they know from now on what chalugluchos are. And the Gemara goes on to give another example with something else where Amsa Debe Rebbe saw somebody and made a comment, and the Chachamim learned the meaning of another thing. That here it sounds like in our Gemara, like each of these was a separate story. There's actually a Yerushalmi that tells the story and says that they all happen one after the other. Okay. Further on, it talks about in the perek. It talks about the shofar that you blow on Rosh Hashanah versus the shofar that you blow by Yovel, and you have different. You have the Mishnah mentions that there's a certain similarity over there. When you blow shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel, the Mishnah says they're the same as far as the tekiyas, as far as the order of the tekiyas, and as far as the brachas that you also say the extra. You also say the middle three brachas in Musan. So then the Gemara says, but wait, it's not quite the same thing because on Rosh Hashanah we say Ziyayim Tchilas Maasecha on Yom Kippur of Yovel we wouldn't. So the Gemara mentions in this connection Amar of Shmuel Yitzchak Keman Matzlinin Ha'idna Ziyayim Tchilas Maasecha is currently in Rishon. Taka, who are we following? Now we learned earlier in the Masechta we had a Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua when the world was created. So which opinion are we following when we say those words in the Tchilas of Rosh Hashanah? Keman Rabbi Eliezer, necessarily we're following Rabbi Eliezer Dama B'Tishrei Nivra Olam, where he says the world was created in Tishrei, meaning to be exact that it started on Chofei Elul and the sixth day Rosh Hashanah was the day when Adam was created. And therefore, Zayim Tchilas Maasecha, because that's the day on which the purpose of Ma'ase Bereishis was accomplished, with man having been created. We have many, many Maimonides Chassidus that talk about the details of why that is, why Taka Rosh Hashanah is the day that man was created, because they just wanted a Dira V'Tachtonim, and we're the ones who accomplished that. But anyway, necessarily, that would be according to Rabbi Eliezer, because according to Rabbi Yeshua, the whole thing happened, beginning Chofei Adar and finishing Rosh Chodesh Nissan. Tosfos mentions Eilavei LeDivrei Elokim Chayim, and we can say that Hashem had machshava to create the world in Tishrei, and then actually created it in Nissan, which is how the Gemara mentions earlier in the Masechta that when it comes to Tzukos, we count from Nissan. We have Birkas Hachamah every 28 years, and it's to recreate when the Eivishter created the sun on Wednesday, and therefore we say when the Tzukos comes on Tuesday night, that's we do it in Nissan, because then we're following Rabbi Yeshua. Because the world was actually created by the Ma'aseh B'Poel, Tosfos is saying in Nissan, but the machshava to do it was in Tishrei. And again, there are many places in Maimor Chassidus and so forth that discuss what exactly that means. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Chafches other days. You have the concept of mitzvahs telos la'asid lover, the idea that says in the Gemara that mitzvahs are going to be bottled in the future. So now, on the face of it, what do you mean? The Torah is nitzvahs, as the Rambam says. We had it a few days ago in Rambam. It's very clear in the Torah that's la'olam ol'olmei olamim, and which we're commanded to do them forever. So what it means is mitzvahs telos la'asid lover, that I've explained, where it's only regarding the tzivui to the person, because that's the definition of mitzvahs, is there a tzivui to the person. After all, the Gemara brings this in context of that after a person passes away, you can bury him in Kilayim, you can bury him in Shatnez. When he comes alive by Tzias HaMeisim, he's going to be wearing Shatnez. Not a problem, because mitzvahs telos la'asid lover. After he passes away, he becomes free from mitzvahs. So even in the world of Tzias HaMeisim, after we've accomplished everything with Hayom La'asosam, a person no longer has a tzivui to keep the mitzvahs. The mitzvahs themselves still exist. There's still a mitzvah, imedis la'olam al-olmei olamim, but not as a tzivui to a person, but rather as a rotzen of Hashem. And then the next piece, he goes on to discuss the point that you can only talk about a tzivui when a person is metzios of his own, la'asid lover, a person won't be a metzios of his own, so therefore it's not even relevant to talk about a tzivui. Continuing with halachos of Shabbos, if you have dirt on your, if you have dirt or mud on your clothing, if it's wet, you're allowed to scratch it off with a finger or with a knife, even with the blade of a knife. But if it's dry, then not, because then you have the malacha of toichin, because then you're grinding it up. Okay.